Frost, a sandwich held in his mouth, drives up a road and swerves as a silver Audi rounds the corner.
Try looking where you're bloody well going.
It's mind where you're bloody well going, sir.
You new, are you, Constable?
Yes, sir.
Oh, get a transfer.
At the scene of a crime.
Tim Fox, Detective Constable, Regional Crime Squad. One shot, close range.
In a glove compartment.
This was £1,000 in cash.
Dick Rycroft, Miriam Madicani. And they're the ones who are responsible for Tim's death.
A bulldozer smashes through a wooden gate.
Open it!
Still getting into trouble, Jack.
Well, you know me. I change a habit of a lifetime.
A gnome is shot at.
You were involved with another man. A policeman.
What are you trying to put on me?
Murder.
Steam drifts from cooling towers. A man falls into a power station coal skip. He's taken away by ambulance. Ray talks to Sam.
Tough break.
An armed robber in a bank.
Fill it now! Fill it now!
Do what he wants.
David Jason stars in A Touch of Frost, based on the characters created by R.D. Wingfield. Line of Fire, Part 2. Screenplay by Michael Russell, produced by Lars McFarlane, and directed by Robert Knights. Police cars arrive outside the bank. Mullet walks towards it with Kavanagh.
Leave the area straight away.
So, we've got the motorbike, no sign of a rider. What more do we know about the hostages?
More bank cashiers and some old bloke who was in there already. Manager was at lunch.
Any details on the weapon?
Small calibre, maybe a revolver.
Right, time you made contact.
Inside the bank.
Leave it!
The gunman has his hostages in a line on the floor.
I told you, stay still!
Outside, the area is cordoned off. Mullet has a mobile to his ear.
I can't see them.
The gunman removes his biker's helmet and calls to his hostages.
Answer it! Go on, just do it!
Frost glances at the others, then gets up and goes over to the phone.
Hello, yes?
Good God. Jack, is that you?
Yes, that's right, Superintendent. I'm one of the hostages.
If they try to come in here, I'll shoot!
Are you all right?
What are they saying?
Does he know you're a policeman?
Yes, that's right. I'm Frost.
What are they saying?
Mm-hmm. What are your demands?
I want a car. I want a car and I take you with me, right?
Yeah, I heard him. Look, what I want is for him to come out alone without the gun, give himself up.
Excuse me. The superintendent of police, he would like to talk to you. I think it's a good idea.
The chubby gunman throws the receiver down.
Jack.
A few £1,000, that's all. We weren't going to hurt anybody.
Why don't you talk to them? I'm sure something can be sorted out.
It's the only way I could get it. That sort of money, I had to.
Frost sits down.
Really? Why? Why was it so important?
Because I look like this. Like a piece of lard. That's my nickname. Lardy. I've tried everything. Diet, pills, exercise. But there's this new treatment. It's guaranteed. I had to try. It's bad enough with your friends. You got to keep making the jokes before they do. And you don't even think about fancying a girl. It's the biggest mistake of all.
Frost spots armed police.
There's this clinic in London. There's a chemical that destroys fat. They said I'd lose half my weight in a month, just like that.
How much does this treatment cost?
£3,000. But I've seen photos of people. Just changed their lives.
What's your name, son?
It's Keith.
Keith.
Look, I know what you're doing. Talking, listening, I know. But I've got to find a way out.
Well, there's no way out, Keith. Because I know what's on the other side of those doors. Police marksman.
And you're an expert, are you?
Frost shrugs.
Well, I do know what's out there. Because, you see, I'm a copper. I'm a detective inspector. My name is Jack Frost.
Keith distractedly points his gun at him, glancing at the phone.
That will be the superintendent. Would you like me to talk to him?
What will they do?
Well, they'll wait until you're ready to talk. But if you go outside with us and that gun, they'll shoot you.
Straight through the inspector?
They're marksmen. They'll miss me. They won't miss you. Come on, Keith. Give it up.
Frost approaches Keith and, staring down the barrel of the gun, slowly and steadily lifts his hand. He wraps his fingers carefully round the barrel, gently removing the pistol from Keith's hand. With his other hand, Frost picks up the phone.
Superintendent, I have the gun. The lad's coming out.
Frost nods at Keith to go, then, breathing a controlled sigh of relief, replaces the receiver. He regards the gun.
After all that, it's a ruddy replica.
Keith appears in the doorway.
Arm police!
Arm police!
Arm police! Keep looking at me. Do exactly as you're told and you will not be harmed. Walk forward slowly toward me. Do it now. Keep looking at me. Keep looking at me! Let me see your hands. Keep walking slowly toward me. Keep looking at me. Face down. Do it!
Keith sinks to his knees.
Keep looking toward me. Keep looking at me. Keep looking at me.
Frost and a cashier appear in the doorway and watch as the marksman, pistol raised, approaches Keith, now lying face down in the road.
Spread everything you've got and don't move a muscle, fat boy.
Frost and the cashier look on uneasily. In an almost empty pub, a young barman clears plates from tables. Shirley sits miserably at a table in a bay window. She looks at her watch and then stares thoughtfully into space before grabbing her camel-coloured coat and black bag and heading for the door. She pauses and goes over to the bar.
Do you know Jack Frost?
Inspector Frost?
Sure. I arranged to meet him here for lunch. If he comes in, could you tell him?
She whispers in his ear. His eyes widen as she turns and struts off. Perplexed, he watches her go. Frost's in Mullet's office.
Well, are you all right?
Yes, no, I'm fine, sir. Fine, thank you. It was only a replica, wasn't it?
Yes, well, you want to know that.
Well, I suppose Detective Superintendent Finlay's been beating your ear again, has he?
Well, yes, Jack. He and I, we'd both like to know what's happening with his detective inspector. Newcomb. And I need details, Jack.
Well, I believe that Newcomb planted the gun that killed DC Fox on the car thieves. Now, he says that he got the gun from Mrs. Fox after it went off by accident when she struggled with her husband. Now, of course, she denies that.
And what have you got from Ryecroft and Madicani?
Oh, well, I think they're in the clear. I don't believe that they're involved in the murder. But on balance, I think that Ryecroft and Madicani didn't even know DC Fox. So it's no good Larry Finlay jumping up and down saying he's got to interview them about the car thefts. I mean, they've been talking to the man who tried to fit them up with murder. I mean, what is a bunch of good lawyers going to do with that?
Yes. Who? Thank you. Well, Jack, I think you better look at your evidence again. Miss Madicani is in the interview room with her solicitor. She wants to talk to you.
Frost nods.
She wants to confess.
Later, in an interview room...
I'm acting on my solicitor's advice.
Right, well, I understand that you wish to make a statement regarding the death of Detective Constable Fox.
No, I don't.
Frost stares incredulously at Madicani and her solicitor.
Then what the hell are we doing here?
My client wishes to make a voluntary statement concerning her involvement in the buying and transportation of cars. She is prepared to admit...
I'm not interested in car theft. That's down to the regional crime squad. I'm investigating the death of a police officer, as you well know.
I do note that the only questions that my client has been asked so far refer to the death of a detective constable. Since Ms. Madicani knows nothing about that, I hope you don't intend to stop her making a statement about matters which do relate directly to her arrest.
Well, she can do what she likes. As long as it doesn't involve wasting my time.
Frost storms out. D.S. Dorridge is with Dick Rycroft in the corridor.
Morning, Mr. Frost. How's Christmas?
What's this?
He wants to make a statement. Mr. Mullett said you...
Advice from your solicitor, is it, Rycroft?
Oh, I've changed solicitors, Mr. Frost. Got the same one as Miriam. Ain't cheap. In fact, you could probably retire on what he charges for a week's work.
Frost smiles sourly.
Get some of Finley's mob over here, will you? And when they've taken statements from our pair of high flyers, I want to sit them at the table and interview them about whether scams, fit-ups and fabricated evidence is standard procedure in Larry Finley's outfit. What are you looking at?
Ray have barely touched food down on the floor. He lies down on the padded bench. Frost and Finley share a meal in an Indian restaurant.
Look, Mark New has been my number two for 6 years. I mean, I was best man at his wedding.
What did you know about Mark and Helen?
I knew he was seeing a married woman, that he was happier than he'd been since he split up with Sandra. I just thought, well, good for him. None of my business. I had no idea who it was.
All right. Let's just take Tim Fox. Mark Newcomb, right? Tim Fox, Mark Newcomb. Tim Fox knows that his wife is, you know, going over the side. So he pleads with her to stay, but she's in love with this other man. So Tim Fox, he gets heavy, he threatens her, and he knocks her about a bit. So much so that she's frightened that he'll get really dangerous if she does leave him. And she's right. Because as soon as she does say that she's going to go, he tries to shoot her. Right? Well, Mark Newcomb. He's in love with Helen Fox. They have an affair. After a little while, she wants to jack it in. But the lover boy here, he can't accept that. And so he stalks her and he threatens her. But what he realises the only thing that's stopping him and Helen from sailing away into the sunset is her husband, Tim. Right. So what he's going to do, he fits Tim up. If Tim Fox doesn't let Helen go, he will blackmail him into letting her do it.
It doesn't work, so he kills him.
Right. So what we got? You either got Tim Fox and Helen as babes in the wood and Mark Newcomb as the wicked witch, or you've got Mark Newcomb as Sir Lancelot riding to rescue the Lady Helen from the wicked dragon, her old man.
Which one do you buy?
Well, until they stop sounding like fairy stories, I don't buy either of them.
Later, in his messy house, Frost presses a button on the answer phone.
You have one message.
You are still the most inconsiderate bastard that you're always
going to
Frost.
Oh, no.
Don't bother to call me back.
Oh.
He winces, chucks down his paper and answers his front door.
Yes. Shirley, I'm
don't,
so...
Don't. I just saw it on the news. You are all right?
Yes, I'm fine, thank you. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I knew you wouldn't have had a decent Christmas dinner over the holidays. So here it is. Turkey, chestnut stuffing, all the trimmings, and a Christmas pudding. Just needs heating. You haven't eaten, have you?
Oh.
Later.
Why didn't you tell me straight away?
I don't know. I mean, I would have been all right if I hadn't had Larry Fiddley's Rogan Josh.
You needn't have pretended, Jack. I've given up walking out in high dudgeon. Mm. No one ever came to drag me back. Mm. When we stopped seeing each other, I said a lot of things. Don't seem to matter very much now.
No, most of them were true. I didn't give you very much back, did I?
Oh, you gave what you gave. You never lied to me about that. I pretended I wasn't asking anything of you, but I was. Whatever I said then, I didn't really want to believe that the job came first.
Mm. Yes, well, job came first, all right. I wonder how many things I've screwed up in my life. start with, my marriage, then my wife's illness.
Oh, come on, Jack. I knew you then. You did everything you could do for her.
No, everything I had to. Not quite the same thing.
Shirley keeps her eyes lowered.
Do you know, we got this young woman. She's been attached to the CID, WPC. She's come to teach us about computers. And you know what? She only wants to be a detective.
It's a reasonable ambition in a police officer.
In a police officer, yeah, but not in a human being.
So you're going to tell her all the things you wished you'd done, instead of being a detective. It's a very short conversation.
She beams fondly at him. Sergeant Brady opens a cell.
Inspector Frost wants to talk to you.
Mark Newcombe heaves himself up and swings his legs off the padded bench. He sighs and rubs his thighs nervously before stepping up to Brady.
Has he spoken to Helen yet? Has she said anything?
Upstairs, Detective Inspector Newcombe. I only do the deliveries.
Newcombe is escorted down the corridor. At her house, Helen Fox is clearing out her husband's wardrobe, putting his clothes into black plastic bin liners. In an interview room, Frost questions Newcombe.
About this money in his building society account.
I told you, we needed to get Tim into a corner to make him back off, so Helen could leave him and get on with her life.
Whose idea was that? Was that yours or hers?
It didn't happen like that. We were desperate to find a way out.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you about it happened, shall I? You set up after a harmless piece of adultery, and you said, I've got an idea. Let's fit up your husband, shall we? We could get him the set. We might even be able to get him put away.
It wasn't going to go that far.
Oh, come on, this wasn't a way out. This was revenge.
Frost leans against a wall.
What about that money that was found in Tim Fox's car? That came from you, didn't
No.
it? No. Oh, where'd it come from?
I don't know.
Frost narrows his eyes.
All right. Let's agree on one thing. Helen Fox was not going to leave her husband because she still loved him. And she told you that.
She loved me. She couldn't stand him. Mr. Frost, you've got to talk to Helen again. Tell her it will be self-defence. I know when she understands that, she'll tell you.
Frost walks away. D.S. Dorridge leans forward.
You just bought a mountain bike.
Newcombe scrutinises him.
Yeah? A Christmas present.
What's that got to do with anything?
I'm just about to show the interviewee some tyre tracks. Found in Oak Park, near the scene of D.C. Fox's murder. You go there quite a lot, don't you?
Once, with Superintendent Finlay.
Well, you see, these tyres, they're very similar to the tyres on the bike in your garage. In fact, they're so similar, I would say they're exactly the same.
I wasn't there. Is there any forensic to put my bike in Oak Park? Hey?
You bought a bike a week before the murder. We've got tyres that match yours at the scene on the same day. It'll take you 10 minutes to cycle from your flat to where these tyre tracks begin at Oak Park. The file is getting fatter.
Look, this doesn't make any sense.
And all you can say to me is I was on my own, I didn't see anyone, and I didn't speak to anyone.
I was waiting for Helen, and when she came round, it was after...
Frost raises his eyebrows expectantly.
After the...
Newcombe sighs. Frost strolls back to the desk and sits down, crossing his arms. He waits, staring sternly, directly at Newcombe, who looks down, miserably.
Helen Fox said she didn't go out that day.
I don't believe you've been back to her. She wouldn't lie if she knew you were trying to fit me up.
What about this boy?
I bought two.
Oh, you bought two? Why was that? In case the first one got a puncture, was it?
It was a Christmas present. One was for me, the other one was for Helen.
Frost and Dorridge exchange interested glances.
All right. Where is this second bike?
I gave it to her last week. It'll be at the house. Jack, talk to her. If she admits she shot Tim when he was trying to kill her, no one will put her away now. Make her understand that. Please!
Outside Mrs. Fox's house. Frost steps out of his old pale blue Volvo estate and wanders down the steep steps leading to her front door. The door of the garage attached to the house is open. Frost goes inside and inspects its contents, a white suitcase and a lawnmower along one wall, a chest freezer and a tumble dryer at the far end, three cases of beer and a ladder against the other wall. He walks back out. Passing the open doorway into the back garden, he notices Helen standing in front of a fire in a brazier.
Hello. Bit early for Twelfth Night, isn't it?
Oh, there's so much stuff. I don't know, I suppose I'm looking for things to do.
She chucks papers into the fire.
Have you got a mountain bike?
It's a peculiar question. Last time I had a bike, I was 13.
Well, Mark Newcomb said that he gave you one as a gift at Christmas, a twin to the one that he bought himself.
That's mad.
Cool, look at this. Here's one for the connoisseurs. Swindon Town v Charlton Athletic. I would appreciate it, Mrs. Fox, if you would come down to the station with me. I've got a few questions that I want to ask you in a more formal way, just to clear up any remaining confusion.
Of course. I'll get my coat.
Thank you.
George wheels himself through his lounge.
I still think you should come, Dad.
What's the point?
Well, you knew him better than I did. You used to go fishing with him.
I gave up fishing a long time ago.
Great. Last week you sent me around to give your condolences to the Cockcrofts. Now it's all pointless.
Well, no one expects you to go.
Well, I am now. Well, that'll be Sam.
I don't know why you put up with that clown. Or does he give you the illusion of having brains yourself?
He's got more about him than most of the losers round here.
Yeah, you'd want that fool at your funeral, wouldn't you?
George gives a scathing sideways glance. Ray stands in the doorway behind him.
Yeah, it's a good job you're not going, Dad. The shock might be too much for some people. I mean, a number of times they see you outside this house. Half of them probably think you're dead already.
George glowers over his shoulder. He discards his paper and flicks on the TV. Outside the house, the cooling towers behind, Sam waits beside his grey Ford Capri. Both men are dressed in black suits. Ray hands Sam a pair of shades.
The finishing touch.
They both put on shades and stand self-importantly at the roadside.
Ready, Mr. Orange?
Cool, Mr. Pink.
Ray strides round to the passenger door. Frost follows Helen into the police station.
I'll see if I can get us a cup of tea.
I prefer coffee. I don't think I could face the Denton canteen too.
Well, of course. You used to work here. Yeah, you know what to expect. I think that something happens to your body if you stay here too long. I can't get enough of the old canteen tea. Could we have a cup of...
They think it was me!
Hey, Sergeant, what do you think you're playing at? Have you not got to interview Mrs. Fox?
Sorry, sir, I was just taking...
Get him back to the cells, go on!
You've got to tell him you did it! In self-defence!
You killed him, you bastard!
They'll understand! Tell him!
I told you to leave me alone!
I love you!
To leave us both alone, and you murdered him!
General! You love me!
You just go in there, please, and... Just sit down over there. Thank you.
You did that on purpose.
I hope it wasn't too distressing.
There's no one in CID, sir. Sergeant Brady said I'd do.
Oh, all right, come on. Take a chair. Sit down there.
WPC Kavanagh pulls up a chair.
Interview with Mrs. Helen Fox, those present, D.I. Frost and...
Constable Kavanagh. At 11:31 on the 30th of December, 1999.
Frost looks at the two statements.
Right. I've got two versions of your husband's death. Yours and your boyfriend's, Mr. Newcomb. What D.I. Newcomb says is that you and he were blackmailing Mr. Fox into letting you leave him quietly, and if your husband, Tim, didn't agree, he'd be thrown out of the police for corruption.
No. I wanted to protect my husband. I told you that.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Newcomb goes on to say you shot your husband in self-defence.
Oh, that's nonsense.
All right, we'll skip the planting of the gun during the police operation. Mr. Newcomb admits that he did that, naturally. But he claims it's a gun you gave him the night your husband was shot.
I don't know anything about a gun!
Frost fingers the papers in front of him, then sits back, taking a long, hard look at Helen. She looks at him and then glances at the uneasy Kavanagh.
What about these his and her bikes?
There were no bikes!
Oh, yes, there were two. I've seen Mr. Newcomb's receipt.
I wouldn't have accepted anything from him. We weren't even talking by then.
Frost smiles briefly. His face hardens again as he gets up and starts to pace the room.
You know, stories come with big holes and little holes, Mrs. Fox. Now, Mark Newcombe's story's got many holes.
Well, that's not surprising.
I'll tell you what is surprising, though. A story that has no holes at all, that's remembered perfectly. People aren't like that. Now, your story makes perfect sense from beginning to end. You've told it several times. You remembered it backwards. You never change a single word.
She frowns, then answers coolly.
I know where I was the night my husband was killed. I know that I was afraid of Mark Newcombe. Does that make me a liar?
Frost holds her gaze.
I'll have to consider it. If you did kill your husband that night, you didn't do it in self-defence. You did it because you planned it.
That's not true!
Oh, yeah. Yes. And when I pulled in D.I. Newcombe, oh, that's when he became expendable. Because, you see, the finger points at him putting the money in the car. Because he planted the cash in Tim's building society account. But the night your husband was killed, you put that £1,000 in the car.
I never believed the police would go this far to protect each other. I had an affair, yeah, but I loved my husband. Mark murdered him.
He checks his notes.
Your husband's life was well insured, a lot of money.
He nods approvingly.
That why you did it?
We were both insured for the same amount of money. If anything happened to either of us, we wanted to know the other one would be all right.
Frost sits back.
Or was it because he wasn't a very good copper? I mean, he failed his sergeant's exam twice. Now, that's not a very easy thing to do. Wasn't very ambitious.
Why are you doing this to me?
Because it's my job, Mrs. Fox.
She averts her eyes. WPC Kavanagh looks down at the table, embarrassed.
All right. You can go home now. I'll arrange for someone to take you.
Please don't bother. Interview ended at 11:33.
Frost opens the door for Helen and watches her go. A funeral procession approaches a graveside in the shadow of the...
You know, Lord, the secrets of our hearts. Shut not your merciful ears to our prayer, but spare us. Lord, most holy, God, most mighty, most holy and merciful Saviour, thou most worthy Judge eternal, suffer us not at our final hour for any pains of death to fall from thee. Bless the Lord, my soul. Lord, my God, thou art very great. Thou art clothed with honour and majesty, who coverest thyself with light as with a garment, who stretcheth out the heavens like a curtain, who layeth the beams of his chambers in the water. O give thanks unto the Lord, call upon his name, make known his deeds among the people, sing unto him, sing psalms unto him, talk ye all of his wondrous works.
Back at Denton Police Station, Frost catches up with Kavanagh on the stairs.
To the cold silence of disapproval, Constable.
You think she did it?
I don't know. Maybe Newcombe did. I'm floundering, right? But what I am doing is turning up the heat to see if I can start a fire. It's an old CID technique. There's no computer program for it. But listen, she is not right. And Newcombe is just a little bit righter. Not a lot, but just a bit. All right, come on then, what do you think?
You've got no evidence against her and she knows it. If she's guilty, she's not going to put her hands up just because you shout at her.
I didn't shout at
her. Close enough.
All right. Maybe I did. Maybe I ought to lean on her a bit harder, bully her a bit more. You see, what we deal with is unpleasant. And sometimes you have to take hold of what is unpleasant inside you and use it. Now, if you can't do that...
I'm sure I could learn, sir. I've met my fair share of unpleasant detectives.
She swans off, leaving Frost chastened. He shrugs her comment off, pinching a piece of toast off a tray being carried upstairs.
Ah, Mr. Mullet, thanks.
He beetles downstairs. At the cemetery, a granite gravestone reads, Beloved wife and mother, Margaret English, died 25th of November 1992, aged 45 years, quietly remembered. Ray takes off and pockets his sunglasses as he lays some flowers on his mother's grave. He reads the inscription. Looking up, he notices a girl in a long black woolen coat. It's Anne Moore. She strolls across to Sam.
We're all going to the house. I don't know if you...
Ray and I, we got to get back to work.
Oh. Sam stands gauchely.
Your family's not in Denton.
Hertfordshire. But they're up in Scotland now. My sister lives there.
You've seen them over the holidays.
I can stand all that. Mince pies and long walks. Longer arguments. Baby's throwing up.
Anne, the car's going.
Coming, Sally.
She walks past Sam.
I don't know if sometime over New Year, if you want a drink or maybe...
Let's do that. I'll see you.
She smiles warmly and walks off. Sam walks over to Ray, who's waiting for him.
Yeah. So, what was all that with Anne Moore? We're going to have a drink. See? What did I tell you? That's Sally Wainwright. I could do her a favour. The way she was looking at me across that coffin. Positively indecent.
She thought we were a couple of prats.
Oh, Sammy, Sammy. When are you going to learn? She just doesn't appreciate a quality product when she sees it. I just have to teach her a lesson, won't I?
He straightens Sam's tie and claps him on his shoulder before walking away. Later, in the control room of the power station, Ray, in white technician's coat, drops off a folder on a desk and, picking up a white hard hat, walks out onto the high metal gantry above the station floor. Looking down, he waves both arms.
Sammy!
Sam looks up. Ray signs, "Tea, come on." In the canteen, Sally wanders round the tables with a plastic container collecting money. Ray eyes her.
So what do you reckon?
She's not interested, Ray.
They're all interested.
Warily, she approaches their table.
We're collecting for Mrs. Cockcroft. It's not much, but people feel they want to do something, so...
Yeah, of course, Sally.
Ray reaches deep into his pocket and pulls out a tenner.
That's very generous.
It's all I got on me. See you later.
Thanks again, Ray.
Is that all you've got to say?
Sorry?
Well, Sam's going out for a drink with Anne. I just thought you might want to make it a foursome. Gives us the option of swapping at half-time.
Ray, I don't want to go out with you. You asked me once before, I said no before.
You'll want to keep an eye on Anne, though. I mean, when Wild Man Goodwin gets her in the back of his car and that hormonal overdrive just kicks in, it could take two responsible adults to tear them off each other.
When did you turn into an adult?
Is that temper, Sally? Always a good sign. You know, you want to stop suppressing those feelings. I know you love me.
I don't even like you, Ray. I like you even less after your performance at the funeral. I mean, you couldn't see a dead man buried without your stupid joke. I mean, if you can't grow up, at least you could behave with a bit of decency. You're pathetic. And your mate's no better. I've talked to Anne. She won't be going for that drink. You might as well pass the message on. Mr. Cockcroft always thought you a nasty piece of work. He was right.
She tosses change at him. Later in the social club.
I told you to leave him. I said Sally didn't want to go out with you.
Sally Wainwright's a nobody. Last year she's dishing up pig's will, and then she gets a badge that says manager. And what? Suddenly she's better than anyone else.
She's a dumb bitch. It wasn't Sally I was asking out.
They're mates. And now you know Anne's a dumb bitch too.
Sally, Anne and the girls are also in the social club.
That she screws to your second date. Think of the money I saved you.
Sally wanders over to the bar. Sam watches her.
Who the hell does she think she is? Slagging me off like that.
Forget it.
I don't think so. That Sally Wainwright wants taking down a peg or two.
Who, by you? That made me laugh. Don't exactly scare her, Sammy.
Well, maybe she should think again.
She returns with some drinks. Later, Sam pulls up outside her house. He loads a rifle. Sally lets her dog out.
Don't take all night.
Sam, through his gun sight, watches as the dog sniffs around the back garden. With the animal framed in the crosshairs, Sam squeezes the trigger. Sally opens her back door.
Trix, come on. Trixie, come on.
Sally turns to find the whimpering dog lying on the ground.
What are you doing?
Sally crouches down beside her.
Trixie? Trix?
Shaking Trixie, Sally begins to cry. The next day, Sam, parked in his car, watches Sally clock off. She and Anne head out of the power plant and into the car park. They stop. Anne gives Sally a comforting hug and kisses her goodbye. Sam starts his car. He pulls off, waving to Sally through his windscreen. Both women notice his departure. Anne shrugs it off as she makes for her car. Heading towards a clutch of hillside allotments, Sam's Ford Capri drives down a narrow track and stops. He steps out. He goes to the back of the car and opens the boot to take out his rifle wrapped in a cloth. Closing the boot, he walks towards a shed. He draws a metal rod from the latch, opens the door and goes inside. Reaching under a set of shelves, he pulls out a long cardboard box. He pulls a handful of bullets out of his pocket and drops them in the box. Removing the cloth from the gun, he puts the rifle into the box. Sliding the box back under the shelving, Sam covers it up with the cloth. Later, back at the plant, Ray jauntily climbs the metal staircase up to where Sam works. Ray looks round, then seeing Sam huddled over a desk, he wanders over.
So where did you disappear to last night?
Nowhere.
Thought you might have had another try at persuading little Miss Moore.
You were right. She's just another loser. Who was in this place?
So Sally's safe from the wrath of Sam, is she?
Ray walks round the back of him.
I wouldn't say that.
Ooh, frightening. You're an animal, Sammy.
He leaves. Sam laughs in his chair. At the station, Frost walks down a corridor towards his office, passing Dorridge and Sally on the way in.
Oh, Lord.
I would like the body back. I know it's the sort of thing you'd probably dump or put in an incinerator. But...
No, of course not. No. We'll get it back to you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Bye-bye. What was all that? I seem to have missed the memo saying we shouldn't give bodies back to the nearest and dearest unless they make a special request.
It's her dog, sir. It got shot.
Oh, yeah? Where?
In her back garden, just outside Denton. She works at the power station.
Does it tie in with Sergeant Brady's cat, do you think?
Well, it's the same area. Another random shooting of a pet.
He hands Frost a statement.
Let's see. Does that young lady have, any ideas?
She assumes it's kids.
Frost shakes his head.
Doesn't sound like kids to me. If they did, they didn't get the rifle from Father Christmas. I tell you what, Susan Kavanagh is making a file on all this on her computer. Tell her to shove the dog in, will you? At least we'll have everything in a decent order. You know what? Some people are still working with microchips and information technology. Me? No, I've skipped all that. I'm on to the chaos theory.
Frost inspects the piles of paper. Trig, carrying a tray of food, joins Frost, who's reading at a table. He does a double take at the huge pile of food and smiles.
Well, that's what I like to see, a man who knows how to enjoy himself.
The sullen-faced Trig unloads his tray.
What's the matter with you?
Mullet.
Hmm?
He's only landed this computer woman on me. And as you know, Jack, I've got my own system.
Yes, and so has PC Kavanagh. Hers is 10 times quicker.
Yeah. Eh? Well, what's happening with Newcomb?
Oh, I don't know. It's not easy.
It's easier for him than for Helen.
She used to work for you, didn't she?
Oh, yeah, great job. Nothing was too much trouble. And she didn't throw my system out the window and bring in one you need a degree to understand.
No, I know what you mean.
And she still got her amnesty record into the computer HQ before any other station in the division.
Frost narrows his eyes.
She was here during the gun amnesty?
Yeah, that's why Mullet sent her to work with me. I was running the amnesty, but
We had so much stuff in.
All right, come on, come with me.
But what about my dinner?
Leave it. Oh, this is important. Oh.
Excuse me. Sorry.
At a computer.
Yeah, it's several 38s in.
About this one.
He hands Trigger a revolver.
It looks familiar. Like a short barrel, 38. I remember thinking one of them was.
Yeah, what about the list?
Well, we'd had over 50 weapons in. Four of them were 38s. Now, wait a minute. There's only three.
Frost's eyes flicker.
Is this one?
No, different serial numbers. In fact, different makes. Two Smith & Wessons. It's not even the same specification. I could have sworn there were four.
Frost is frowning.
Helen Fox did this, didn't she? I mean, filled in the details and all the records.
From my notes.
Frost bites his lip.
If a gun went missing, would it be possible to wipe the details from the computer?
By Helen? I don't believe it.
Kavanagh comes in.
Oh, Inspector Frost, about those dead cats and dogs.
Yeah, well, never mind about that now. I've got something else I want to ask you.
Disappointed, she wanders over to them.
If information has been wiped from a computer, is there any way of getting it back?
Well, that depends exactly what backup was being used.
All right, this was 6 months ago, maybe more.
Was the information sent to HQ?
Well, of course it was. That was the whole idea. But this is what went up to HQ.
Is there any way of getting back wiped information?
If there are other versions of the files, old backups. I mean, it's unlikely, but there are programs.
Right, well, there you are. You want to be a detective, so you can forget all about your moggies for a minute. I want you to find me something that isn't there.
There's almost no chance.
Oh, no. There never is. That's what makes the job such a pile of challenges.
Frost snaps up the gun barrel. Ryecroft, handcuffed, is being led from the rear of the station to a waiting car, headlights blazing in the darkness. Frost watches as Ryecroft is bundled into the back seat. Ryecroft gives Frost a fleeting smile. Miss Madicani is also led outside. He turns to her.
Well, it's going to be a long haul, Miss Madicani, no matter how much you pay your lawyers.
Are you a betting man, Mr. Frost?
No.
Wise, you couldn't afford to lose. I'll send you a postcard from Barbados.
A confident smile across her face, the elegant woman swans off. Frost watches her go, almost admiring Madicani's panache. She too is helped into the back of a waiting vehicle. The cars leave as D.S. Finlay drives in. Frost ambles over to him as he winds down the window.
Well, there you go. All yours.
Remember I told my squad I didn't want your investigation screwing up this operation?
Well, yeah, something along those lines, so...
Yeah, well, now there's every chance that Madicani and Ryecroft's statements aren't worth the paper they're written on. They'll be claiming they made them under duress when they were being set up for murdering a copper with a gun planted on them by another copper.
Well, that won't get them far, will it?
Maybe, with the right lawyers. Tainted evidence. And it could taint everything else we come up with. You could even end up being called as a witness for the defence.
Well, you always said it didn't smell right, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, now it stinks. Thanks a bunch.
Well, it wasn't me who decided that they'd killed Tim Fox. I was only doing the spade work. Like you asked me to, sir.
Finlay grits his teeth and pulls away. Frost watches a line of vehicles file out of the station car park. Meanwhile, Sally Wainwright pulls up outside her house in her blue-grey Vauxhall Astra. Ray lurks behind bushes on the opposite side of the road, turning his head to watch her as she slows to a stop. Sally steps out of her car and hurries up the path to her front door. Back at the station, Kavanagh stares at a computer screen. She opens up a window, then clicks on Find. Frost and Shirley are at a table in a restaurant.
So will you be working on Millennium Night?
Well, no, we're on standby. We're
same here.
Yes, just in case the old millennium bug strikes and causes anarchy and chaos to the streets of Denton, Superintendent Mullet and I will be there to save the day.
Do I guess I'm like you? If I wasn't on standby, I'd be volunteering.
Oh, I know. So would I. Breaking a habit of a lifetime.
Jack, if you could, you would move into Denton Police Station.
Ah, no. See, I read about this trip to India. Watch the millennium dawn over the Taj Mahal. £25,000. I was going to book it, but, you know, I was a bit late.
Shirley laughs at him.
Well, with all the usual provisos about you getting called away, New Year's Eve, as you've missed out on the Taj Mahal, how's about a tikka masala at the Golden Curry?
His face falls, then brightens.
All right, you're on. It's only about £24,995 cheaper, but what about the dawning over Denton?
They raise their glasses and toast each other. Sally dashes out of her house. Pulling the door after her, she makes for her car. Still hidden behind the bushes, Ray watches her drive off and walks away from the house. Kavanagh loads a floppy disk into a computer. A list of information appears on the monitor. As she studies the scrolling data, she sips from a polystyrene cup. Flashing words appear at the bottom of the screen, reading, File 750A, recovered OK. She leans back and smiles.
Up yours, Inspector Frost.
Helen carries a glass of white wine into her lounge and sits down in front of the TV.
This area of high pressure will move slowly south, bringing icy patches to many roads, particularly in sheltered areas. It'll be a clear night with light winds, and it'll feel bitterly cold.
She points the remote at the TV and takes a chocolate from a box lying open on a coffee table. Meanwhile, Sally, driving her car, is listening to the radio.
So, how was it for you then? What about the prezzies that you got? I still got a pair of socks and £2 from my Auntie Jean. Thanks very much, Auntie Jean.
She depresses the brake pedal. Her car doesn't respond. She overshoots a junction, swerving to avoid a car. Rolling downhill, jabbing at the brakes, she overtakes the other car, narrowly missing a van. Losing control, she collides with the verge. The car rolls over, ending up on its roof. The following morning, Frost climbs the stairs at the station. Dorridge is coming the other way.
Ah, I want that mountain bike that Helen Fox dumped. It's the last piece. It must be in a limited radius. Well, come on, get out the maps and the wellies. Let's get the team moving. Anybody'd think this was a holiday or something.
Forensic want a word. They've got a suspicious traffic accident.
Oh, well, you go and handle it, will you, Sergeant? Go on. On your way back, get me a sandwich. Chicken. If you can't get chicken, get cheese. If you can't get cheese, just go out and buy some. I want that mountain bike. Go on. Oi, by the way, have you seen Susan Kavanagh?
Not today, sir, no.
Oh, all right. If you do, tell her I owe her a drink. And she can have a splash of lime in a lager. Go on, off you go.
Dorridge sighs and goes. The Astra is up on a hydraulic ramp being inspected in a police workshop.
Car went out of control on Broad Street last night, going down the hill. Woman's in a coma.
Had she been drinking?
Apparently not. She was on her way to a party. It's an old car, it's not well maintained, and the brakes failed.
But this is what struck me as odd. Scratches here and here on the chassis.
I think it's been tampered with.
It looks like something's been dragged across the cables recently. Sharp teeth, hacksaw possibly. Now, the cut on this piece of cable is too clean to have happened naturally. I don't think this was an accident.
Do you know who she was?
Sally Wainwright, Fairview Road.
I know her. She came in to see me yesterday. Somebody shot her dog.
Look what's been happening around Kimmington in the last 6 months. Person or persons unknown killing cats.
Nasty, vicious, random. Then several burglaries. Not a lot taken, but a lot of damage done. Now, I reckon that's what it's all about. Next, Sally Wainwright. Her dog gets shot, two bullets, same as the cat's. Next morning she goes out, someone's fiddled with the brakes. Car goes out of control, she ends up in hospital. She's in a coma. Might even die.
And you think that was the intention?
Yes. Sally Wainwright was targeted. That means there must be a motive. And I believe there was a motive for the rest, too. The damaged furniture, the cats, a lot.
Oh, you're talking about a very warped mind, Jack. Very warped.
Yes, sir. In my experience, there's only one place with more warp factors. It's the Starship Enterprise.
Mullet gives Frost a half-hearted smile. In her silver Peugeot 205, Kavanagh pulls into a car park, pulling up next to Sam's Ford Capri. Leaving the car, she makes her way up to the wide walkway of a series of brick-built flats. Washing hangs further down the walkway, where two elderly women are nattering. Kavanagh walks up to a blue front door. Inside, Sam and Ray are listening to music.
Is that bastard complaining about the noise again?
Haven't called you about the bloody music, have they?
Sam gets to his feet and goes to the door. Ray clambers off the settee and turns the stereo down.
You bunch of losers!
Sam opens the door.
Hello, it's just a routine call, sir. Are you Mr. S. Goodwin, the holder of a licence for a 2.2 rifle?
Come on. It's about my gun licence. It's here somewhere, I saw it.
Sam rummages through some papers in the kitchen. Ray stares hard at Kavanagh, then backs away into the lounge. Opening cupboard doors, Sam continues to search. Eventually, he finds what he's looking for and presents the document to her. She takes it from him and reads it as Ray gets back up off the sofa and approaches them.
What do you use the rifle for?
Rabbits, I've got an allotment.
No one knows why. I've never seen him produce a vegetable off it.
Well, I would like to see the weapon. I just need to establish that it matches the serial number I've got here. And I may need to take it in for tests, just to eliminate it from the inquiries.
It's like I said, I keep it at the allotment in the shed.
That doesn't sound very secure. It should be here in a secure cabinet.
Ray looks at his friend.
I'd like to see it.
Sam shifts uneasily.
Now would be fine.
She hands him back his papers, then follows the men out to the car park.
Sam will drive down, you follow, all right?
You're not going to do him just because he doesn't keep the rifle in the flat. I mean, not with New Year's Eve and all that.
I'll be right behind you.
She heads for her car. Ray smirks at her and joins Sam in the Capri. Kavanagh enjoys a quiet smile as she steps into her car.
When you wipe a disc, the stuff's still actually on it. Till more information's dumped on top. Well, I didn't even know you could retrieve it, but Susan used some program or other.
Frost nods.
So this is the gun that killed Tim Fox.
Serial number's here, and it says it came with 6 rounds.
The details are on screen.
Well, the gun was in the station. Helen Fox had access and opportunity. Now we've got evidence that she wiped it off the records.
Trigg sighs, annoyed.
I trusted Helen.
Yeah, well, so did Mark Newcomb. So did her husband.
Sam drives agitatedly down the track towards the allotment.
It's a rifle, she said. They know what they're looking for.
What are they going to prove? It's down in your allotment. Anyone could get hold of it.
Ray looks in the wing mirror.
The most they can do you for is being a careless git.
He grins, cocksure.
Ray, I didn't say about Sally's dog.
What are you talking about?
I said I was going to take Sally down a peg. I was going to tell you, like with the cats and doing over the houses when people pissed us off.
You stupid, ignorant moron.
Needled, Ray steps out of the car. Susan draws up behind them.
That's where Sam meditates.
Sam lets them into his allotment.
door did have a lock. I'm going to sort it out.
A child could walk in there.
He pushes open the shed door and goes inside. Susan stands in the doorway. Ray hovers behind her, keeping a lookout all around him. Seeing a long-handled garden tool, he picks it up. Sam is recovering the cardboard box. Kavanagh falls forward.
What the hell are you doing? I'm cleaning up your mess. And if you don't want to join her, you better give me a hand to get rid of her.
They lift her up. At the station, Triggs at his computer.
Susan here?
No. She's in CID, isn't she?
No.
Doesn't she realise that skiving is a privilege reserved for just inspectors and
she's
those
not skiving. She's still working on that other job you gave her.
What other job?
Dead cats and dogs. Well, it was forensic on the bullet in the dead dog. She mapped licences for 22 rifles, came up with a few dozen names and addresses, right area, and went off to check with the licence holders.
Where is this list?
It'll be on her laptop.
Well, get it printed fast. If we don't stop her, she could be checking up on a murderer.
Parked in a scrap heap, Ray and Sam get out of Kavanagh's Peugeot. Petrol can in his hand, Ray douses the car with fuel. He discards the container. He flicks a Zippo lighter. Flames engulf the car. Ray and Sam sprint away from the blazing inferno. Steam rises from the cooling towers into the black night sky. A car swings into the car park. Inside the plant, Ray jogs up a metal staircase, barking into a mobile phone.
I'm at work now, so get your fat ass in gear and be here for 11. You do what I bloody say, Samuel, or do you want to go the same way?
In Sam's flat. He puts the phone down, and he pauses to ponder for an instant, before leaping to his feet and hurrying upstairs. He goes to his bedroom and drags a suitcase out of the wardrobe. He starts piling clothes into the suitcase and a hold-all.
It's not your fault, Jack.
She's done exactly what I would have done if I were in her shoes. She's gone out to prove that she could hack it. And I was the one that wound her up to it. What's this?
Susan's list. Trouble is, there's too much information here. Need to filter some of it out. We've got every crime where a pet's even been mentioned, right down to a burglary where a fish tank got broken.
What's that? Say that again.
A burglar smashed some bloke's fish tank. I suppose the fish died, that's why it's on the list.
Frost sits back in his chair.
Cockcroft. Hugh Cockcroft.
Yeah, that's right. He had the accident at the power station.
It was a burglary, do you remember? Nothing much was taken. Next thing we knew, he'd fallen into 100 tons of nutty slack and broken his neck.
Frost pauses for thought.
Maybe the link isn't pets, but power station.
Frost's with Anne and Tracy in a pub.
I want you to think back the last few days that your father was alive.
How do you mean?
Well, you work at the power station too, you know. Was there anyone he had an upset with? Huh? Doesn't matter how insignificant.
Why? What do you think? Someone was behind it?
No, look, it could be very important. It's just that it could be that it wasn't an accident. Now, don't think too much about it. Anything you can remember.
Well, there was a security man, Jim Spence. He had a go at Dad for parking his car in the supervisor's place.
All right. Yeah, come on.
And there was Ray English and Sam Goodwin, I suppose. I mean, it wasn't...
Yeah, come on.
Well, Ray was pestering me about going out with him. Dad heard some remark. Well, you know, just the way blokes talk about girls. Dad told Ray to stay away from me. I didn't want him doing things like that. You know, it was embarrassing.
Frost nods and scribbles it down.
Sally Wainwright, did she know this, English and Goodwin?
Yeah, of course. She didn't like them. Mr. Frost, I think... Well, I know. Sam asked me out the other day. I was going to, but...
Yes, go on.
Sally said that they were trouble, drugs even, so I called it off. But Sam got really angry. Not with me, with Sally. The things he said about her, but I can't believe he wouldn't.
Sam jogs downstairs with the suitcase and holdall, ignoring the phone. In the power station control room, Ray holds the receiver. He checks his watch and hangs up. Laden with baggage, Sam rushes out and goes to his car. He opens the boot just as Frost pulls up behind him. Sam loads the boot. Frost climbs out of his car.
You can't park there.
This is Goodwin, isn't it?
Can you move? I'm going out.
Going away, more like. Just a minute. My name is Frost, Detective Inspector Frost, and what I want from you is...
Where's Constable Kavanagh?
You can't just...
I can just do anything I like, anything at all. I know all about Sally Wainwright. What I want to know is, where is Susan Kavanagh? I want to know now!
The power station cooling towers are silhouetted against the dimly lit sky. Frost pulls his Volvo up by the entrance gate. A security guard emerges from his office to meet them. Frost leaps out of the car.
Police, open up! It's an emergency!
I'll need some identification.
I'm Detective Inspector Frost, Denton CID. I've got some... Look, just open up, will you?
Well, I don't know. I phoned the station.
Look, why don't you... Oh, fuck.
Frost climbs back into his car, backs up, and then lurches forward, smashing through the security barrier. As he drives, Frost turns to Sam beside him.
All right, come on, which one is it?
Danny End on the left.
You better be right.
Ray throws open a fire exit and leads Kavanagh at gunpoint down a staircase.
Down the stairs! Or I'll throw you down.
Gagged, with her hands tied behind her back, Kavanagh edges down the steps around the edge of the concrete building. Frost pulls up and switches off his lights. Kavanagh reaches ground level. Then turns round and kicks Ray between the legs. He falls onto the rocky ground and she runs off. Clutching his hand, Ray drags himself to his feet and runs after her. Frost, sitting in the car, sees Ray searching for his prey.
Here, what's that? Who's there?
I don't know.
That's your mate.
Well, I couldn't see.
That gives your wrist.
Frost handcuffs Sam's wrist to the steering wheel. Kavanagh, still bound and gagged, scuttles alongside a coal conveyor belt. She struggles up some stairs. Frost jogs through the plant, weaving through the maze of pipes, machinery and mesh cages. He stops to look around. As he moves off again, Ray dashes through the haze of steam behind him. Kavanagh trips and stumbles through the plant, looking up and around her, scared. She stops for breath, leaning heavily against a mesh-screened lift. She stumbles into the lift. Ray is staring at her from the other side of the lift's mesh walls. He dashes round and corners her.
That wasn't the best way to go, Constable!
He flings her against a metal door.
You pissed me off, you know that!
Police! Give it up, English!
Ray kicks Kavanagh out of the lift. Pulling down the shutters, he takes the lift up.
Are you all right?
Yeah! He knows this place like the back of his hand. He'll find a way out.
Frost pulls out a penknife to free Kavanagh's hands. On an upper gantry, Ray gets out of the lift. He jams a plastic container in the door. Looking down, Ray watches as police cars, vans and an ambulance pull onto the plant floor below. Ray moves off quickly, dashing up a long metal stairway. Frost makes his way along a dark walkway, cloaked in rising steam. It leads him out to the jammed lift. He removes the plastic container and closes the lift doors. Frost sends the lift back down. Dorridge leads the paramedics to a shaken Kavanagh. Ray walks along another metal walkway, clutching his bleeding hand. He reaches a ladder and pulls himself up it using his other hand. At the top, he turns a lever, jamming it with a coin to a position marked right. Frost looks up to see a movable yellow gantry sliding slowly across the roof above him. He looks around and runs off. As the gantry continues to move, Ray sprints along its wooden planked platform. Frost hurries up more stairs. Dorridge is still with Kavanagh. Kavanagh looks up. Dorridge scrambles into the lift.
Help me! I'm slipping!
Ray is hanging through a hole in the planking. Frost lies down, grabbing hold of him. Ray dangles precariously high above ground. Frost struggles to hold him as he slips little by little away from his grasp. Dorridge leads two uniformed officers towards them.
Don't let me go!
Give me your hand!
Blood appears under the plaster on Frost's hand as he tries to hang on to Ray. Ray plummets towards the ground. Frost lies sprawled in exhaustion on the dusty floorboards. Dude Frost.
I'm sorry, George. Very sorry. Tried to save him. I just couldn't hold on to him.
The WPC? Is she all right?
Yes.
George swallows hard.
You better tell me the rest of it.
Frost looks uneasy.
Maybe now's not the time, eh, George?
You said there were burglars. You said Hugh Cockcroft's death might not be an accident.
Frost starts to pace the room.
Well, it's likely that Ray went up and loosened some railings. He knew that Cockcroft went up there for a smoke. I'm not saying that he intended to kill him, but...
The woman in the car?
She's going to pull through.
Well, that's something.
George's bottom lip quivers.
We've only got to go on what Goodwin has told us. It seems that he didn't know most of what Ray was doing.
George looks up.
He would say that, wouldn't he?
Frost holds George's gaze and shrugs.
George. George, these things have happened. And it was Ray that did them. It's no good trying to pretend that someone else put him up to
it. I'm pretending nothing. My son's dead. And that's the best thing to come out of this. I'm not asking for apology for you for not saving his life. If I'd have been the one holding on to him, I'd have let him drop.
Frost looks up, shocked. He stares steadily at George.
Didn't you ever get a sense that anything was wrong?
You mean I should have guessed my son was barking mad? Till this happened, I was a policeman, not a bloody psychiatrist. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Now I don't have a son at all.
George struggles to hold back the tears.
Yeah, there was something wrong, wasn't there? All the time. I never realised when your legs packed up that you lost the use of your eyes as well. Because had you opened them a number of years ago, you wouldn't be sitting there telling me that you're glad your son is dead.
George looks bitterly at Frost.
Get out, Jack.
The two men eye each other steadily until, emotional, George looks away. Frost looks down sadly. Then stands up and starts to go. He stops in the doorway.
Still sorry I didn't save him.
Frost lowers his head and leaves. George starts to break down and suddenly turns, stopping in front of a cabinet. He removes the framed photos of his son from the top of it and, turning, flings the photos into a drawer. Tight-lipped, his eyes wet with tears, George picks up the remote and turns on the TV. Dorridge's car pulls up outside Helen's house. Frost gets out of the passenger seat. A blonde WPC gets out of the back. Helen stares through a window at them as they approach the house. She turns, walking slowly towards the front door. Helen opens the door to Frost and his colleagues, and they follow her inside.
By the way, we found your mountain bike where you dumped it.
Mark dumped it.
No jury is ever going to swallow that.
She checks her appearance in a compact.
Do you know that when something is wiped from a computer, most people think that that's it, you know, it's gone, lost forever. Well, that ain't necessarily so. We got a record of the gun you took. We also know the precise time you attempted to wipe that record from the computer.
Helen turns and stares at him, wide-eyed. Frost nods at her. Her coat over her arm, Helen leaves the house, escorted by Dorridge and the WPC. Frost puts down the Fox's wedding photograph. Back at the station, Mullet is hosting New Year drinks.
No, I'm really all right, sir. Thank you.
Good. Hope so, because come the new year, I'm going to learn how to capture crooks by a computer. And you're going to have to teach me all about your hardware.
Software.
There you are. You see what I mean? I don't even know my hardware from your software.
Well, just think of it as like sex, sir. Only the other way round.
Sex? I don't think that far back.
With computers, you put the software into the hardware.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Excuse me, sir.
Kavanagh brushes past him.
You still all right for that drink tomorrow?
You bet.
Great. Well, I've got to go. I'm on the desk.
Right.
Excuse me. Thank you, sir.
Oh, not at all, no. Happy New Year.
Frost turns to Dorridge.
You're teaching her, are you? How to become a detective?
Might be.
Frost makes to go.
Thank you very much, sir.
Jack, have another drink.
What? No, I'm on standby.
Well, I'm on duty.
Oh, well, I can't refuse a senior officer, can I?
Oh, well, that could be the start of a very promising new millennium resolution.
Ah, well, you never know your luck, sir.
Yes, well, I think I do, Jack. Cheers.
They down their sherries. Later, at the Indian restaurant, food is wheeled towards Frost and Shirley's table.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. I think it's mine, Jack.
Yes, you're right. Superintendent Mullet wouldn't phone me until I was in the middle of the meal.
Hello? Yes?
Frost tries not to listen in.
Yes, I see. I'm on my way.
His face falls.
There's a problem in maternity. It's going to be a difficult cesarean. I've got to go.
I don't believe this. You've beaten me to it. Well, at least I won't starve.
Happy New Year, Jack.
Yeah. And to you, Shirley.
I doubt I'll get back.
Shirley heads out.
Well, probably end up having a glass of cooking sherry with Superintendent Mullet. And then I'll join the first van load of millennium drunks for Auld Lang Syne.
He sips his red wine.
Oh, well, it's not want not.
And digs in.
A Touch of Frost Series 7, 8 and 9 is available now on DVD.